And a very good morning to everyone on the West Coast and to all of us on the East Coast. It's lunchtime. It's time for learning. And so, of course, as for the usual, we have a brand new episode or a brand new session. And for us today, it's actually, again, a different type of session that we're kind of seeing, trying out different formats here on Tech Days TV. This one, in this case, rather than talking about features, today we're talking about lessons learned from a gentleman and a company who've actually taken an existing system and put it up in the cloud. And in the process of doing that, they obviously learned a whole bunch of things. And so he's here to share that with you to kind of give you an idea of, you know, as you're thinking about moving things to the cloud, what does it take? What are some of the things to avoid? And actually, to implement. So without further ado, let's see some more details on that. Here we go. So in today's session, like I said, we're going to understand how the cloud can in fact be leveraged from a corporate strategy perspective and not just from a technical perspective. Look at some of the fundamental challenges faced in a development lifecycle when you're looking at cloud-based software as a service applications, and look at some of the practices that could be useful when you are actually doing a cloud-based project. And to do that, our expert for today is Gene Lozano from Media Valet or VRX Studios. And actually, interestingly enough, Gene and company have been working with Windows Azure right pretty much from the get-go, right from 2009. He is, in fact, their CTO, architect, and developer, which is actually what I love about it, because you have all aspects, or looking at all aspects of the stack in this case. And of course, being as happy as he is with the platform, he does, in fact, call himself a Azure advocate and critic. So without further ado, let's get right into the clip and into the video, sorry. And remember, this is, in fact, a live session. Gene is with us and will join us towards the end of the session. So if you find something interesting that he talks about and you want to share your opinions, or you do, in fact, have a question, go ahead and post that into the chat window there. And Gene and I will be back to answer those questions. So until then, let's get going with the session, and we'll see you back in a bit.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Jean Lozano, and I'm the CTO of VRX Studios in Media Valley. This morning, I will talk about our journey into the cloud, how we built a digital asset management system on Windows Azure, and the lessons learned throughout the process. We've been on Windows Azure for over 2 years now, and today, I will share with you our experience, both the good things and the bad things, as we build an enterprise class software as a service offering on the Windows Azure platform. But before we do that, let me provide some context by telling you about our company, the challenges we faced, and how cloud computing became an integral part of our business strategy. So VRX Studios is a global full-service photography company. We work with 10,000 hotels and cruise lines all around the world. In a nutshell, our business is we have contracts with major hotel brands. We shoot all their properties for them all around the world. And then we manage all the content that we created for them. And we host them these virtual tours and these images in web galleries that they now put into their website so that people can actually view 360-degree tours of their rooms or amenities, or look at pictures of the pool or the different rooms. So, in terms of business challenges, our primary challenge is that our legacy 8-year-old DAMS has reached its limits, right? It just cannot scale up to the volume and size of the media assets that we were currently generating. In addition to that, it was a brittle system. Our current development team was having challenges maintaining and adjusting the application, the legacy system, to be able to adapt to evolving and changing client needs. So our solution back then, being the CTO, my solution was to, between a build and buy decision, my decision was to actually buy, and I made that recommendation, and the management team concurred. So what we did was we initially purchased mid-level dams, but unfortunately it worked up to a certain degree. Then it started failing as we loaded more assets into it as well. Then we purchased high-level enterprise class dams, but we also hired a systems integrator to be able to make the customizations needed. But during the discovery process, what happened was they discovered that it would take a significant amount of customization for that system to actually meet our needs. And looking at the numbers back then, I was thinking to myself, I can build a whole new dams probably for less than the customization cost of what they were charging. So, and in addition to that, our client base was becoming global in scope. Previously, a few years ago, our client base was mostly North American based, right? Now they're scattered all over the world. We've got clients in Europe, Asia, Middle East. And because of that, and because we deal with media assets, large media files, so latency has become a problem because it's slow to pull assets from media files from our North American data center. Also, infrastructure management, we cannot, even if we try to co-locate in a data center in Europe and Asia as well, we're just not built to run 24/7 in terms of, from an operation standpoint, in for our, from the systems administration standpoint. Also, since we're in the production business, our storage requirements are very, very erratic. So it is very difficult for us to plan. Given the challenges that we were facing, we had to reevaluate our options and think out of the box. 2 years ago, well, over 2 years ago, there were two major trends that were gaining momentum. One was cloud computing. The other one was CMIS, the Content Management Interoperability Service Specification. Okay. So, thinking about our challenges, cloud computing presented a few solutions. Number one, it can allow us to be as close to the customer as possible without having to relocate or co-locate with data centers in Europe and Asia. Number two, it addressed our scalability requirements for storage because we don't have to plan for storage anymore. And number three, cloud computing, specifically platform as a service, will relieve us of the virtual infrastructure management requirements that we are looking at if we co-locate with other providers. Then, from the others on the other side of the fence, the Content Management Interoperability Service, CMIS, provided us with a blueprint on how to build a digital asset management system because it is a set of specifications geared towards content management systems on how content management systems are supposed to talk to each other. But as we read about the specifications, it gave us more and deeper insight on how a content management system or a digital asset management system should behave. And given our previous experience with the past two implementations of digital asset management systems, building a whole new digital asset management system on the cloud became a very appealing concept for us. So now that we've decided to actually go ahead and build the digital asset management system ourselves on the cloud, the next question was, what type of cloud do we use and which provider should we use? Definitely, we have to go with a choice of platform as a service. it has zero virtual infrastructure management burden. Unlike if we go with Amazon, we would have to, or Rackspace, we would have to set up the virtual servers ourselves, okay, and then manage them ourselves. When we go with Azure, we don't have to deal with that anymore. Also, going with Azure, we're a .NET shop, right? We built our web galleries or presentation platforms for VRX on .NET. So my local development team is familiar with .NET. My offshore development team is a .NET shop. So given the .NET resources and the familiarity with .NET, it's just a no-brainer for us given the integration of Windows Azure with .NET. In addition to that, we're still building on top of Windows Server 2008, and we're still building on top of IIS 7.5. These are platforms that we're already familiar with, but now they're just loaded in Azure with a load balancer in front of it, right? So it's still the almost the same platform with certain nuances that we'll talk about later. It also has an excellent SDK, and if you look at the internet, you'll see a lot of open source projects that are related to Azure as well. So on my end, when I tried to evaluate the system, when I downloaded the SDK, tried to do some prototyping and doing some spikes, I was actually impressed with how easy it was to learn Azure. In addition to that, with Azure, we're not dependent on working with IT pros to provision development VMs or test VMs anymore, because testers can actually do that. And developers and testers can actually do that from the portal. And this relieves us of our, again, the infrastructure management burden. Lastly, and I was just smitten by this feature, is the VIP swap. So in Windows Azure, you can actually deploy your application on the cloud to production, and you can deploy it to staging. So if you have a new update, you deploy the update to staging. If that has new features or functionality, you deploy that to staging, you test it in staging, and then after testing and staging, if you're happy with it, just do a VIP swap, and then the end user will not even know, it's transparent to the end user that you have already upgraded the application, and that's the beauty of it. So now that we've decided what platform to use, now the difficult part is selling it internally within the company. And then once you sold it internally within the company, the next idea is how to use Azure and its how to use the platform to sell it to your customers. So what we actually did was, number one, main reason for doing it is geographic reach. Azure has 6 data centers all over the world, and they're constantly building so that we can have a data center in Asia, we can use the data center in Europe. Well, there's 2 data centers in Europe and 2 in Asia. We can just deploy the applications there without having to co-locate. And that brings our content as close to the customer as possible. In addition to that, there are 26 CDN nodes. I think there are more than 26 now. But there are 26 CDN nodes that can be leveraged as well for media delivery. Also, one of the things that we can actually capitalize on is that a digital asset management system is a glorified file management system, right? So if you save a file on MediaValet, what would happen is that that file is triple redundant. It gets saved 3 times on the same data center, and it gets geo-replicated to another data center, and you get another 3 copies of that file. So in essence, you have 6 copies of the file, and that is how reliable it can get. And that level of reliability is something that we pitch to our customers. In addition to that, scalability, availability, is something that customers will not have to bother with anymore, right? In the past, if they have to buy a digital asset management system, they have to configure their own drives. No, if it's slowing down, they have to either scale up the server or add more servers. With Azure, we don't do that anymore, right? It's all in the app. For as long as the app is designed properly, it will scale. Lastly, second to last, is that we have our zero capital expenditures, because unlike having to buy or co-locate, you have a certain set of, you have your initial investment in the equipment, but with Windows Azure, it's all operating expense, and that gets passed on to the customers because they don't have to shoulder that cost either. Lastly, Media Valley is being sold to mostly marketing departments. And marketing departments, when they need something, they have to reach out to their IT departments for the IT departments to procure a digital asset management system for them, set up the infrastructure, the servers, and integrate and implement the system within their infrastructure. As far as we're concerned now, there's going to be less IT involvement as far as our clients are concerned, because they just sign up. It's a software, it's a service, they just sign up, they use the software, and that's it. Now that we've decided to build the system on Azure, we know that about the potential of the Media Valley as a product, and it has actually been 2 years, and it's actually a revenue-generating product right now for VRX. Let's talk about the architecture. Let's go for the technical deep dive now. So, I always make the analogy between a painter and a software designer or developer, right? As far as I'm concerned, when you're a painter, you just want to focus on your masterpiece. You just want to make sure that you have the right strong canvas that you can paint on, and then you just focus on your brush strokes, right? As a software designer, as an architect, we have to look for that canvas as well, right? And as far as I'm concerned, I don't want to weave the canvas anymore, in the same way that I don't want to set up the virtual infrastructure for my application anymore. What I want to do is, I just want to have a solid fabric that I can develop on, and that should scale depending on the way I design the system. Okay? And that fabric is Windows Azure. So, if we look at this is an overview of the architecture of Windows Azure, right? Going from the bottom going up, you see at the bottom, it's all Windows Azure services. We use Azure tables, we use the NoSQL approach, because 2 years ago, SQL Azure was just starting, and it had a very, and the capacity was very small, but tables were more mature, and these Azure tables were also quite scalable. We use Azure Queues for inter-role messaging, and we use Azure Blob to as the container of all our media files, right? But working with that, you'll have to work with either the REST API of Windows Azure, or if you want to simplify things, you make use of the Client Storage Library. But as far as our developers are concerned, even using the Client Storage Library, there are some concepts that would still take time to learn, and we need to ramp up development quickly. So what we did was we built this middle tier, which is our what I call the Media Valley Service Library, right? So at the bottom end of that middle tier, we have our integrated provider model. So we've got our file services, our session provider, profile provider, role provider, membership provider, and table service. So the table service is like your data access application block in your enterprise library. File services is a wrapper to the blob so that our developers would feel that they're working with files as opposed to working with blobs. And so it's just another layer of abstraction that's easier to comprehend. And then we've got session providers. It's just the typical ASP.NET session providers. Exact same implementation, but it uses Azure tables for that. Then, on top of that, we built our framework libraries for data management, content management, file management, logging, configuration management. I'll be talking about that later. Security and identity, and the web foundation to build the portal on. And then, once that whole, those two tiers were built, what we did was to build the next tier, which was our domain entities, and then on top of that, we built our interfaces. So we've got a couple of services here running. So we've got our, we talked about the CMIS, the content management service, as a primary component. We have a search service that actually runs using Lucene on Azure. Okay, we've got our media processing service that uses a couple of other tools to do transcoding or image conversion within Azure as well as a worker role. And we've got our entity indexer because we make use of NoSQL a lot. So what we do is we actually create a lot of denormalized views to speed up access for the portal. Then on top of that layer, from that's facing the client can either use the Media Valet portal, which is just a web role. And this web role just consumes all the services to be able to provide the client with an easy-to-manage interface, right? Easy-to-use interface, I mean. And then we've got, we still have our CMIS interface exposed, so that if they have a CMIS client, they can actually connect to it via REST. Okay? And that is how we structured Media Valet. So, going now to lessons learned. Let's talk about lessons learned in terms of the development lifecycle. So, first off, let's talk about lessons learned from an architecture point of view. Then we'll talk about from a development and testing point of view. And then from a maintenance point of view. So, let's talk about architecture. First lesson learned. Massively scalable does not mean infinitely scalable. Okay? With all the hype that's going on right now with the cloud, it's easy for people to confuse the cloud with this as being a resource of infinite number of servers and storage, but that's not true. You know, it's massively scalable, but it has its limits. For example, talking about Windows Azure Storage, per storage account, you'll probably have a maximum of 100 terabytes, and that's the maximum per storage account. For throughput, right now, the throughput of Windows Azure Storage is 5,000 transactions per second, right? So if you have 10 instances hitting your Azure Storage, well, depending, you know, you might be well within the 5,000 transactions per second. Now, if you think that you can scale up to 100 instances of your web role to hit that same Azure Storage, well, think again, because right now what's going to happen is you might hit that throughput limit. Though you can increase the number of instances, you will still have that bottleneck in the same way we had the bottleneck before when you have those web farms and you have the database server, with the database server being the bottleneck, it's going to be the same, right? So how do you address that? Design with federation in mind. Okay, so again, in the old days, so what happened was you have your web farm, and in order to, if you've reached the throughput limit of your database server, what you do is you either scale up or you scale out. Microsoft says scale out, and what happens is that you partition your database into different servers so that the throughput limit gets distributed. Same thing, I would recommend the exact same architecture for Windows Azure Storage. The first thing to split out is your diagnostic logs should be on a different storage account than your data storage. And your data storage, you should ideally split it out as well so that your application should be able to address different storage accounts, because you can have multiple storage accounts. So that means that your throughput level will now increase by the number of storage accounts that your application is using, right? Now, the other important item, like we've discussed, I've mentioned to you how we approached Media Valet development by creating our own framework. Well, if we waited a little longer, there are now new frameworks that are coming out. And for example, Cloud Ninja is there already. It's a good multi-tenant platform. It may or may not be good for you depending on your specific application, but it's worth looking at and it's worth investigating, because you know, as I've learned in the past, when there's a problem, before you come up with a solution, it's always good to have a framework to use. Okay. The next lesson learned is bigger is not always better. In the past, if we have a web server and it's reaching its capacity, chances are we'll increase the RAM or add another CPU, right? Right now with Windows Azure, that may not be the case. It might be faster or better instead of increasing the size of your instance from a single core to a dual core or from a dual core to a quad core, it might be more reasonable and you might have more throughput by putting in two dual cores instead of increasing to one quad core. Okay, so that those are the things that you would have to look into, but we'll talk about this again later as I explain something with regards to development. The other important items that I'd like to discuss is the paradox of cloud technology. Well, technology is supposed to make our lives easier, but you know, with cloud technology, it just makes decisions a little harder. Architectural decisions, I mean. Like, take for example something as simple as session management. In the past, session management, if you have to implement it on a web farm, you'll have to put it on a database server, right? Now, if you're implementing session management, you can use the like what we use, the table storage, or you can put it into SQL Azure, or you can make use of App Fabric. There are different choices to use, and it's up to you as an architect and as a software developer to make that decision. What you're familiar with would be a good starting point, and then what's best practice is another thing to consider. Going on with lessons learned for architecture, now you've got to expect accelerated release cycles in SDKs and new features. The announcement last week, June 7, was major. There were so many features that it will probably take me a few months to be able to go through all those new features of Azure. But then again, you have to understand that historically in the last 2 years, probably almost every quarter I see an SDK come out. And sometimes a new feature will come out. So you have to expect and anticipate that pace of development in Azure. Okay? So that is, from an architecture standpoint, you have to be on the lookout for that. The other thing to reconsider is the data transfer mechanisms. So for example, right now, if I to transfer, in the past, if I have to transfer data from my from on-prem to my co-located service in Dallas, what I would do is it's just FTP, FTP, FTP. But with Windows Azure, what's going to happen now is you've got to use the REST API. Okay, so you have to think of a different way, a more efficient way. Like for us, we deal with file transfers a lot. So, you know, as far as we're concerned, blob container, shared access signatures, it's just golden. You'll just have to look into that. Architecture with respect to the new features and the accelerated release cycles. Now, architecture will, as a consequence, will evolve faster. For example, when let's take for example Facebook. When Facebook first came out, it didn't have the architecture that it has right now. Okay, but and because architecture evolves, right? But in if you're building something on Azure, now as new features come out, you will have a lot of new features to leverage or to optimize your application. So now your architecture will evolve faster, and you will have to be prepared for that. And but the good thing about it is that Microsoft can also provide architectural guidance. So we're an ISV now. And being an ISV and being a partner of Microsoft, we get good architectural guidance from Microsoft with regards to new features that are coming out, or if we run into some challenges with some limitations, Microsoft's here to help. I was pleasantly surprised about that. Never expected it. Now, from a development and QA perspective, this is what I would have to say. Number one, platform will change, but development methodologies remain the same. Agile is agile. Whether you're developing an enterprise app for a server-based implementation, or whether you're developing for the cloud, implement the same thing. There will be some minor changes, but they're more from a tactical point of view, and that's it. But stick to what you are familiar with regards to development methodologies. Number two, from a keep subscriptions separate for your development, test, and live. So what we have is we have a subscription for development, we've got a subscription for test, and for each data center that we have, we actually have a separate for live data centers in Europe and in Asia. We actually have separate subscriptions for them. Number one, easier to manage. You don't have your developers tinkering with live data. Number two, it's easier to replicate environments. So if I do the deployment on test, I actually have to perform the exact same steps in deploying it to live. For offshore teams, create a separate affinity group for your instances. Take advantage of data center locations. Like I work with both local and offshore groups, and our offshore team is in India, and as I've mentioned earlier, all storage transactions are REST calls, so it's an HTTP request, right? So being an HTTP request, it goes through the web, and it goes from, say, from India to Chicago. Latency there is probably 200 milliseconds. But if you go from India to your data center in Singapore, probably will go down to around 40, 50 milliseconds. Big improvement. It will help speed up development much faster. Okay. Understands the nuances of the platform. Okay. Got a nice story to tell about this. So, in terms of nuances of the platform, whether you're developing for Windows Server 2000, 2008, 2003, IIS 6, IIS 7.5, or whether you're developing for Linux, or if you're running something on Apache, you know, you have to understand the nuances of the platform. Each platform will have its nuances, right? So in our case here, When we were doing the prototyping, I actually implemented, I saw this project for an FTP service on Azure. So it's like fantastic, right? So I see this open source project and I can deploy it on Azure and I can modify the user management to make use of my membership provider so that I can have a single sign-on for my FTP service and my web application, right? So, but then again, as we were testing, initially it was good. As we started testing large files, why does it always fail after 1 minute? So I was telling myself, like, must be a bug somewhere. Then we started reaching out again to Microsoft for support. Then we figured out that it's a security feature. If you have a Windows, if you have a TCP connection that's idle for 1 minute, Windows Azure will cut it off. So FTP, being the nature of FTP, is you connect to one port and it will connect to an active port on another one, so that the connection port becomes idle. Although you're transferring from the other port, it will cut off the connection. Again, it boils down to understanding the nuances of the platform. Development and QA. This, from a QA standpoint, is loading large amounts of test data to Azure storage is non-trivial. If you're uploading, you know, several megs, even 100 megs, not a problem, blob. But try transferring, say, 5 million records of table storage from one storage account. Say, if you want to replicate your live to test, try doing that by trying to download it and trying to put it up. It's gonna take time. It's non-trivial. You'll have to figure it out. There are tools out there that can help you do it, but then again, it requires as you play with the system, as you learn, it's a discoverable environment. You'll just have to dig in, and I'm just trying to manage expectations here. Okay, the next item is that there's a paradigm shift from relational to parallel programming. Okay, in the past, when we deal with database servers, mostly relational database servers, SQL Server, we send a query out, it does all the joins on the back end, and then it gives us the result set. Okay, if you're doing NoSQL like what we did, it's not going to happen. Okay. So there's no relational, you don't enjoy the power of the relational engine. There's no relational engine whatsoever. You are coding the actual relationship between classes. So it pays to know parallel programming. So .NET 4.0, Task Parallel Library, powerful tool. Okay. So what we normally do is we execute parallel queries so that when we pull the data, we pull several result sets at the same time in order to manipulate them within our instances. Expect the unexpected from the development fabric to the cloud. It might be fixed now, but in our experience from when we started, there were fidelity issues between the development fabric, or what's now called the compute emulator or the storage emulator, and the actual live cloud. So there were errors that were happening locally on the development fabric, but if you program against the live Azure storage, those errors don't actually happen, right? So just expect the unexpected. But for as long as you know what these are, again, understanding the nuances of the platform, for as long as you know what these are, then you don't have to worry about them so much. It's just going to be second nature on how to work around those issues. One other item from a development standpoint, but this mostly from a project management standpoint, is that the supply of highly qualified Azure developers is quite low. There's a lot of demand, and we've interviewed 28 companies in the past looking for Azure developers, right? But the supply of highly qualified, I mean highly qualified, not those that just do the prototypes and say that they've been able to do it, it's quite low right now. So the earlier you start or building out your own skills, it actually adds more value to you as a developer. And this is something that's very important. When I started programming, I don't want to say when, but when I started programming a long time ago, focus was always performance, performance, performance. My application has to be blazing fast. Then came the period when, you know, you have to program with security in mind. You know, you have to be security conscious in programming. Now with cloud computing, especially platform as a service, now you have to program with cost in mind. You have to be cost conscious about programming. If you're dealing with Azure Storage, for example, each query that you run or each read or each time you check the queue, that's a storage transaction. That's billable. Although the cost is very negligible, but if you're running hundreds of millions of those transactions, oh boy, it adds up very quickly. So again, what I would suggest is learn, understand the billing mechanisms within Azure, and then as you're coding and reviewing the code of somebody else, just make sure that all the unnecessary requests are avoided. Now, from a deployment and maintenance point of view, is from an ops standpoint, this is what I would suggest. Ask the development team to move the settings from their app config or web config to the CS configuration files, right? Because if you build an Azure app, whatever is in the web.config and the app config is static because it's in the instance. The only way for you to change that is you have to redeploy the instance. Okay? Now, if you move those settings to the service configuration files, now it becomes dynamic because you don't have to redeploy the instance. You just have to log into the management portal and edit those settings. And from a manageability standpoint, that helps a lot. In our case, what we just did was... we have a configuration block in our service library that actually uses the CS configuration file first, and the app or web config is just a secondary if it's really going to be static. Now, the other suggestion that I have is to deploy roles in separate hosted services. What that means is that when you have roles, when you deploy an application, you can actually deploy a web role and a worker role, or one or more worker roles, on the same service, right? Since they talk to each other, you can deploy them in the same service. But I would suggest that you split them out into different services, create a separate service for each, and deploy each role in its own service. Because what's going to happen is that if you have a change in just one component, you just have to deploy that component and you don't have to deploy the two worker roles or the additional worker role anymore, right? And that is why I suggest that. Now, this looks very simple, but mind you, this might save you a lot of grief later on. Make sure that deployment labels are distinct. When you deploy to Windows Azure, you put in a label for your deployment. Okay, so typically if I'm deploying my portal web application, I'll just probably label it portal, right? But then again, come to think of it, when billing time comes and you see the log, right? And the log, you will not be able to distinguish between one deployment from the other deployment if they're all labeled the same. Right? So don't make that mistake. I suggest, you know, put in the component name, put in a build number or a timestamp there so that you know that which deployment ran for which time, right? So simple but might save a lot of grief. Storage analytics, it's a new feature. It's a not so new feature considering the new features that came out lately, but storage analytics is a very powerful tool, right? So as I told you, when you're trying to work with Windows Azure, there are the throughput limits that you have to be concerned about, and you've got like errors because of concurrency that might happen, and these analytics provide you enough detail that you can actually go from an hour per hour, how many transactions did I get, how many billable transactions do I have, and if I have like errors, client errors, if I go now to the logs, which the storage analytics provide, I can dig down and get the logs and look at the exact errors. Going to be very, very helpful. Now, from a management point of view and support, we need to have really good logging system. That's why in part of our framework as well was we have to implement our own a very robust logging system so that we log when an error comes out, we know we'll be able to trace the different events that led to the error. That's one. And we'll be able to trace the different events that led to the error, and also we will be able to provide the necessary information. Say if we really cannot figure out what's going on with what's really causing the issue, and we have to refer it to Microsoft, like if you're dealing with Windows Azure Storage, now we can provide Microsoft with it's part of the rest of the HTTP header, the MS request ID. This particular request generated the error. Please get back to us on that. Saves you a lot of trouble. For security purposes, from a maintenance point of view, when you have your Windows Azure Storage, you have two access keys, primary, secondary. Keep on rotating your access keys. You know, it's just like the old days. Like, even in your current systems right now, you have security policies when you actually have to change your password every 90 days. You can actually do that every sprint in Azure. Rotate your access keys every sprint, right? And this is a pleasant surprise for me. Microsoft Azure support is quite responsive. I didn't expect that, but the moment you open up a ticket with them, it will ask you, like, does it affect your live site? Is it something that prevents you from shipping the product on time? And there's different levels, and if you choose the correct level, they'll get back to you in a very timely manner. Now, for the next steps, first thing that I would suggest, embrace change. Cloud computing is here, and it's here to stay, right? So remember the times when it was the mainframes, then the PCs. You know, people who did not embrace the PC were left behind. So it's going to be the same thing, like PC to client server to web, and now we're making this is the next big wave. You have to embrace that change. And once you have that conviction that you're going into cloud computing, okay, now you have to make sure that, you know, just get the Azure SDK, okay, and get the Azure Training Kit. The Azure Training Kit is a very good resource. That's how I got started, right? And then once you are familiar with the different features and what you can do with Azure, right, look at opportunities within your company where you can actually leverage the cloud, or even outside of your company if you're enterprising enough to see, what could be out there in the market, right? And then do your prototyping and start pitching within your company, like, I have this idea. And then once you get more into it, once you're into an actual project, it's a discoverable environment. You will discover and discover more. You will learn more. And at the same time, you're constantly improving your craft. For resources, look at the Windows Azure SDK, the Platform Training Kit. The Windows Azure Storage Team blog is a good resource. Subscribe to that. And if you have to understand billing, there's a blog on billing as well. What's billable, what's not billable. And for parallel programming, look it up, the Task Parallel Library in MSDN. To know about the limitations of Windows Azure, there's this article about storage scalability targets. And take a look at Cloud Ninja. It's a pretty interesting project. It's a good framework to use.